Let's focus a little bit on the idea of avatars. I think it's become a common term to speak of an avatar, but really, avatars have been around, at least in theory, for a long time. It goes back to the Hindu concept, right, of a god projection?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the term avatar, in the religious terms, when a god wanted to come to Earth, the god couldn't interact in a godly form with humans, so the gods would occupy what's called avatars, meaning a vehicle so that it's possible for the god to interact with the humans on Earth. There's some debate as to who took this term into the world of VR. Some say Neal Stephenson in his book Snow Crash. Others say that Randy Farmer did it in the early 80s on a project that he worked on. But the idea is the same, which is you're occupying another body or vehicle as you interact with others.
Okay, so avatars, what's the future of, I mean, we talk about avatars, we talk about 3D movies, and everybody understands that. But there's this one piece about the avatar, which it makes for a great movie convention, but I'm kind of curious to see what you all think of it, that if somebody kills your avatar, they kill you. Is there ever a time, do you imagine, in the future where one would become so connected to one's avatar that their life might be at risk?
Sure. I mean, think about the amount of time that people are spending online. So there's a study that just came out of the Kaiser Family Foundation. Children between the ages of 6 and 16, if you look at the amount of hours per day they watch movies and read books, combined, it's 1 hour. If you look at the amount of time that they use characters, avatars in video games, it's 2 hours per day. So people are spending, children are spending more time in avatars than they are reading and watching movies combined. Adult players of World of Warcraft, they spend 20 hours a week inside these games. So what you're finding is people having these online identities and really getting quite caught up in them. There's a famous story that came out about violence, about a player in an online video game who, when somebody wronged his character in the virtual world, this guy actually hunted him down, knocked on his door. When he opened the door, he stabbed them.
I remember this, yeah.
So, I mean, people get really connected to their avatars. I mean, I don't think we're at the point yet, luckily, where a virtual death is literally a physical death. But I certainly think in a metaphorical sense that if you took some of these players of World of Warcraft for 20, 30, 40 hours a week and you said you can't use your avatar anymore, you'd get a real serious psychological consequence.
So we were talking about a kind of super reality or a virtual reality that would be an enhanced grounded experience, right? A grounded experience on steroids. Who wants to explain that?
Jeremy here. So this is one of the biggest points that we could hope to drive home in this discussion, which is in virtual reality, there are no rules. So when you're in a video conference, whatever I'm doing, when you see the video of it, you're seeing just what I'm doing. Virtual reality works differently. So when I show you my avatar in a virtual world, my computer is basically sending you information about how I look and how I'm moving, and then you're drawing me on your computer how I've told you that I'm behaving or how I'm looking. So I can present to you my avatar in a virtual world, and it can be the perfectly idealized form of a person that anyone could possibly imagine. In other words, in the physical world, what you see is what you get. With avatars, the sky is the limit. And tons and tons of examples I can give you of ways that avatars can actually outperform their human counterparts in terms of being persuasive, in terms of selling you things, in terms of making you a likable person, in terms of getting dates. It's just it's a medium that allows us to do things that were never possible in the physical world.
So what would be the trade-off for all of these innovations? What are we losing in the process, do you think?
Well, lots of Jeremy here, and lots of ways we can talk about that. But let's push Jim's example of the teacher. So, as a teacher, I can increase my effectiveness by having my avatar maintain eye contact with 1,000 students at once, so each of them feels like I'm looking right at her. But let me talk about a more insidious example of this that we've actually done in political elections. And in virtual reality, an avatar can look however you want it. So, I can make my avatar's face look more like your face without you consciously realizing this. So imagine that you and I were having a conversation. I was trying to sell you something, and I subtly, subconsciously morphed my face to look 40% or 30% like your face. So not enough for you to consciously notice it, but enough so that you would implicitly feel this special bond between you and I just because I kind of look like you. It's this big idea that we took before the 2004 presidential election. We got a sample of about 200 people from across the country, and some of the people saw candidates, versions of Bush or Kerry, that had their own face morphed into the candidate. So they see a version of that person's face that subtly, implicitly looks like the voter. What we demonstrated in that experiment was that the probability of you voting for Bush or Kerry was influenced by whether or not Bush or Kerry looked like you. So 1 week before the election, who you were going to vote for was determined by whether or not that candidate basically stole your face. And we've since then replicated this in lots and lots of different experiments. Me making my avatar look more like yours is trivial from a computer graphics standpoint. It's a simple blend of pixels and of XYZ coordinates. But when I do so, you can have very, very drastic social and societal effects. And as you said, in terms of the trade-off, maybe not so good, such great ones in the sense that candidates can basically steal your vote.
Well, okay, and this way too, you could have a candidate look more, say, Hispanic or more Asian or more, you know, fill in your ethnic group or your religious group or whatever, just based and to do that in a way to make them more appealing and not just, you know, put on a yarmulke because they're speaking at a local JCC, but they actually are going to be they're going to change their appearance from Irish American to looking Middle Eastern or something, and to appeal for votes. And you can do the same thing then with their voices. Then too,
absolutely.
As you said,
but the critical thing here is that unlike face-to-face, I can throw myself, so Hillary Clinton threw on a southern drawl when she was down in Alpha. But the difference in VR is, A, if I'm interacting with 1,000 people, so if Hillary's giving a physical talk to 1,000 people, she can only present one version of herself. In virtual reality, if I'm talking to 1,000 people, I can literally send out 1,000 different versions of my avatar simultaneously that's been tailored to each one of them. So everyone receives a perfectly tailored version of me. The second thing is that so when Hillary Clinton, when she morphed her voice to try to appear more southern, it was detected. She didn't do a perfect job of it, and the reaction was drastic. People perceived this as a kind of a poor strategy. When you're using computer algorithms to morph your voice, your avatar's voice, to be more effective, you can do it perfectly in the sense that it won't be consciously detected, and you can control how high or low the morph is to make it more southern, more Asian, more Latino, to any degree that you think is important.